We get signal. My screen turn on. You're listening to the radio program about hackers places. This here little radio program about hackers places.
Welcome to the Dev Random Show. This is Fish speaking. Today we have GMC as a technician. Jay, GMC, how are you doing?
I'm fine, thanks.
Hey, and we got Oxar.
Hello, folks.
Hey, where's the strange sound for Oxar, man?
Strange sound. Now we're not doing the strange sound.
Oh, we're not doing the strange sound. Hey, and the remote side we got GMC. Let's Lee Dog. Hey, Lee Dog, how are you doing?
Hey, what's up, man? I'm good.
Hey, you're calling in from Malaysia?
Nee, I'm in Netherlands.
Netherlands. Let's say it's Holland for the listeners.
Yeah, but it's not so cold, actually, strangely. It's supposed to be winter, but quite warm.
You especially came over for the snow?
Yeah, I want my money back, man. There's no snow.
Hey, GMC, I heard you came over from Toronto. Was there any snow over there?
There was plenty of snow, yeah.
You're in the wrong country, Lee Dog.
Damn, GMC, you should have brought some back, man.
Hey, today on the agenda, we're going to talk about some activities we're over. First of the activities was ETH0, and we have Jan Klopper at the line. Jan, how are you doing?
Hi, Fish. Thanks for calling.
Yes, how was the party over there at Zevenaar?
It was pretty good, actually. We had about 105 people there. You were there, so.
Yeah, the setup changed a bit since last summer and last winter. What was the change, and what made you to do this change?
We decided to do more of a workshop kind of thing, because getting your hands actually on a project and doing stuff is what we Dutch people need, I think. We've been talking and we've been discussing stuff for a long time now, and we haven't really been doing any awesome projects. So that's why we decided to go for workshops instead of lectures.
And what kind of workshops were you able to do at the event?
We had the FabLab guys with the laser cutters and all the electronic stuff. And we had the RESPACE engineering technical team, I think you'd call it, with all their electronic stuff. And, there was just general tinkering.
You also had a DJ lab, I saw, and Lee Dog was DJing at the DJ lab of ETH0. Lee Dog?
Yeah, the lab was pretty fun, man. It's pretty fun. I really enjoyed it, actually. It was quite cool.
And then some guys brought analog synthesizers and so on.
Yes, it's one of the guys from Skills, the new hackerspace in Almere. They, they built this analog synthesizer, and I haven't got a clue how it works, but it's awesome. So that's the kind of stuff we want to see.
It was a lot of buttons.
Millions of buttons, and it looks like a telephone system from, 1800 with all the cables and buttons and stuff. So yeah,
they built it themselves. I heard. I was talking to the guys for a while, and they told me how it was built and so on. And
that's what I think these hackers ought to do.
Yeah, you also played with the stuff, GMC.
No, I did not get a chance. Unfortunately, I was already 10 kilometers above the Atlantic Ocean then. But that was one of the cooler workshops. I did see the thing when I was at the analog synthesizer, when I was at the opening of Skills. But I wanted to see that, because actually I'm also doing a bit of circuit bending currently in RevSpace.
Yeah, there's a RevSpace circuit bending Monday coming up.
It's a circuit bending night. It's once every month, and we've got different projects like modifying existing keyboards. I'm building a Game Boy drum computer. Whoa. So I can use my electronic drum kit and play 4-bit drums with it.
More music. Hey, about ETH0, what's on the list for next events or next activities? And can you tell the listeners a little bit more about ETH0? We already spoke about the events, but a lot of people don't know about the community of ETH0.
I think I can try. We're a we originate from just a group of friends, I think, and we decided not to go to the gamer events anymore. You know, we didn't see ourselves doing any gaming, so we really didn't fit into the big gaming picture. And that way, that's why we decided, okay, what do we think is interesting? And that came down on open source and Linux and the hacking and tinkering with technology. So that's why we decided to throw our own party. And that grew out to be 200 people this summer. And I think there's about 130 people in the IRC permanently now. So
yeah, we as Hackerspace, as Signal, we still remember ETH Zero Summer Edition because we launched the Signal radio station at ETH Zero Summer.
Yeah.
Hey, thank you for joining us in the show. We're going to listen to some. Do we have some 8-bit to complete with the story, GMC?
No, I don't have any 8-bit. I do have. I'm getting songs from. There's this nice site, cchits.net, and they're basically when new releases come out, they play these. There's a special show like the introduction show. They have a review show. They have a chart show, and they have a every month they have a top 40 of the CC music that's most popular.
That sounds good.
And so I've been looking at the list for today, and the number that I wanted to play first, it's on the 25th position. It's called Skydiving, featuring Jasmine Kara, and it's by Jone.
Only 6 o'clock in the morning and my heartbeat is out of control. 10 minutes into boarding feels like I'm about to explode. Time for the ride up, tension started to swirl. I can't believe I'm gonna free fall from the top of the world. Senses peaked with a crazy anticipation. Feeling like this, tell me how the hell can I be patient? Jumpsuit rig, Google helmet all in place. Double checking just in case. I'm elated, baby, freedom one green light away. And I just can't wait. Spread my wings, time to fly. One step out, all it takes for me to touch the sky. So amazing, so liberating. 12,000 feet, AGL, so breathtaking. Belly down, box me now. 4 minutes of pleasure without any spark of distraction around. State of mind, euphoria, wish could last forever. From this day on, nothing can stop us from getting back together.
Every time you wanna feel freedom in your life, just go skydiving, baby, go skydiving, yeah. Every time you wanna feel freedom in your life, just go skydiving, baby, go skydiving, yeah. I love the sky, baby, I love the sky, baby. I love the sky, baby. I love the sky, baby. I love the sky.
Whoa, if I listen to this music, GMC, we're getting some notch of nice CC music.
Oh yeah, definitely. Yeah, people should check it out, ccchits.net. You can also vote for the numbers there, and at some point I expect to integrate the voting within the Signal site, so you can vote directly from the Signal some way.
Sounds like a good hack. Hey, in the meanwhile, if people got questions, they can send an email to signal@hackerspaces.org, use hashtag Signal on Twitter, tune in at our IRC channel on Freenode. And what kind of other communications do we still have? I think there's it. We can also call you if you got any questions.
Yep.
In the meanwhile, we called Dr. Wex. Dr.
Hello.
Wex, how are you doing, man? You're sitting in the train?
No. I'm still at the place.
Which place?
Oh, I'm at Het Blijvertje in Dutch.
At what?
Het Blijvertje, which would translate into English to the stayer or something like that.
A stayer, small stayer or something.
Yeah, the small stayer.
And what happened over there?
Well, there's actually an info night about Anonymous and WikiLeaks.
Ah, WikiLeaks.
And it's about what is Anonymous, what are they doing, is it only about DDoSing, or is there actually a greater thought behind it?
Well, doctor, is it only about DDoSing, or is it about something else?
No, well, not only, but well, I've mixed feelings about it actually. I think it's interesting to give an info night so people can make up their minds. A lot of people are anti-censorship, which is really, really, really good. But when WikiLeaks get blocked by a country, please don't DDoS a site like or the government. It's like it's stupid. It's causing damages. And if you want to be a really good activist, go dig into the cables or something.
Okay. And what kind of people are joining the event, Dr. Wex?
Well, a lot of squatters, also some activists. I even saw a journalist from a newspaper. I don't know which one. So it's the crowd which I kind of expected.
And did you saw the 16-year-old guy who was caught by the police, or?
No, I didn't saw him. I was quite surprised. I thought a lot more kids would have showed up. But, well, he isn't here.
And was the police also over there to write down your name and to at least tap your internet line and see what's happening on your side?
Well, maybe undercover.
You didn't recognize them.
Well, we are playing spot the fat, but don't tell them.
Okay. So at least we got some documentation about them.
Yes.
Watch out, fat, if you're now there. So, is there any conclusion on what happened tonight?
Well, it's actually still busy. We first saw a really big, long documentary about hacking and phone phishing. A lot of people didn't know about that age and about that type of hacking from 20 years ago. So that was interesting to see how the people responded to that. So, yeah, and now they are still busy with the presentation about Anon, and it's really, really cold outside.
Okay. So, you're going to hang over for another hour over there and then heading back home?
Yeah, I think so.
Well,
my last day at work.
Well, Wex, have some fun over there then. Pass us the information probably on the next Hackerspace Hour.
Sure.
And we keep in touch. Thanks for joining the show.
Yes. Yeah, no problem. My pleasure.
Hello to the DOS kabouters for me.
I will.
Yeah.
Hey, Oki.
Hey, Oki. We're also talking about the patent of the speculoos was released.
Yeah.
today. Great news, the commercial.
So, okay, you have to speak into the microphone, actually. I know you're near with this thing, but it helps for people
mostly
hearing.
Mostly microphones are hidden around here. Now, the commercial court in Ghent has today decided that the speculoos patent isn't valid anymore, so everybody can make open speculoos now. And
for the people, what is speculoos?
Well, yeah, what isn't? It is a very funny brown substance. It looks like pindakaas or peanut butter or whatever, but it's sweet. So it's like a cookie, but then it's liquid and you can put it on your toast or whatever. So it's very... You know, sometimes I bring it over to Germany and then people go mad about this stuff.
For the most people who don't know Oxor or Oki or Open Oki or whatever, Oki is usually in food hacking, into food hacking, and speculoos is, of course, on your in your dictionary of food hacking, isn't it?
Yeah, it's mostly, it's like if I come over to Germany, then I bring some stuff. Just to have fun, and you can do all kinds of fun stuff with speculoos.
And you also did some cooking with mate, making mate stew or.
Well, I did.
Tell us.
I did make mate wakkel pudding. It's like a jelly pudding. So, but then yeah, it's like what we do on the ICP. That's the small camp where most of the angels come around from the CCC. It's mostly at the same time as ATR0, so, and the most fun part about ICMP is because it's near the brewery of Mate.
Ah, yes, it's
so
good.
So we're right to the source, so if everybody is bothering us, we can always put something on the highway, so you cannot get any Mate anymore for a week.
Hey, talking about Mate and food and so on, are we going to do some food hacking on Hack in the Box in the future, Lidog?
I don't know. It depends on whether Oki wants to do some of that.
I could bring some Germans over.
It could be interesting.
The Deutsche.
To our food hacking lab.
What's going to happen in the near future on Hack in the Box, Lidog?
For this year, yeah. We've got quite a number of things planned. I mean, it's our second trip over, but we're expanding it a little bit. In terms of what we're planning to have, there's like a brand new Capture the Flag competition. We've got like an expanded Hackerspaces Village. Of course, in terms of the conference itself, we've got Joe Sullivan, who's the Chief Security Officer for Facebook, coming down to
security and
tell
Facebook.
Us a little bit.
That should be interesting.
I'm wondering.
Yeah, 500 million users in exactly a very easy network to secure, I would guess. And of course, you know, everybody's always, you know, looking into the privacy aspects of Facebook and. Yeah, should be quite interesting.
And there's going to be a panel discussion too?
Yeah, that's something new. We're having a panel discussion on the economics of vulnerabilities, which should be quite an interesting discussion, like about whether ODAs should be sold. They are being sold, obviously. You know, and you know, the whole legal situation with that, with selling and trading of exploits and zero days and tools and so on.
For hackerspaces in the world, there is going to happen something new on the hackerspaces site on Hack in the Box 2011 Amsterdam. It's called the Hackerspaces Challenge. Dylan, can you give us a brief introduction about it?
Well, actually, I guess Fish, you're the best person to tell us a bit more about this, since that you came up with the idea, after all.
Yeah, true, totally true. But it's always good to hear somebody else talking about it. Now, for the listeners and all the hackerspaces who are going to listen afterwards, at Hack in the Box 2011 Amsterdam, there's going to be a hackerspaces challenge. The hackerspaces are invited to come over and to build a project over there. I think Wex is gone. there's going to be a prize. Soon we're going to announce more about the details and what the technology is going to be used to build some stuff. But I think this challenge is going to add something new to conferences and it's good. Talking about challenges, we have something to give away, GMC.
Is it giveaway time again?
It's giveaway time again, to repeat here. We have the t-shirt which Oki wears at the moment. So if you're watching to the camera over here, it's a t-shirt of Hack in the Box. You should tell it, GMC. You're much better in talking about clothes.
Am I? Are we giving away Oki's t-shirt? So he has to go home bare tonight.
No.
XL, so I'm not going to give away this one. I think Fish has normal sizes.
It's the Hack in the Box 2010 Kuala Lumpur t-shirt, and it was a limited edition by Hackerspace KL and Random Data.
We did an exploit on it.
Yeah, what's the amount of prints, Dylan?
I think it was like 100 pieces, maybe, or even less than that, probably.
Ooh. Yeah.
So it's like really limited, really limited.
Yeah. So grab your chance, and we have a kind of challenge for it again. This time we keep the challenge open for 1 week. You have to send an email or a Twitter message with hashtag Signal. With you can tell it. GMC.
Okay. Well, the thing is, you have to send us a baby hack, so a hack that applies to babies, the world of babies. I know nothing of it, but Fish knows more about babies.
Yeah,
he is about to find out a lot more.
I'm going to find out.
And so probably, well, anything. I mean, something to help you stay awake during those long hours that the baby is keeping you awake.
Yeah, or use it to keep the baby asleep.
That would also help, yeah. But make sure it's safe for the baby. I mean, we don't want to make people duct tape to tape babies to the ceiling or anything. That's you will be disqualified if you hurt the babies.
So starting from now, next show we will probably announce the winner and also what the best hacks were.
Yeah, but guys, you never told anybody when is High Tobay Amsterdam.
True. So tell us, Hockey.
It's May the 17th until 20th. So in the Grand Kranopolski in Amsterdam, and for nobody knows where that is, it's across the Queen.
The what?
Our Royal Highness lives across the thing.
So it's at the Dam Square. The Dam Square.
Dam Square, man. I think it's called...
In Amsterdam.
Yeah.
Amsterdam.
Yeah, somewhere between the coffee shops and the Queen.
So actually, you could tap in the wireless of our Royal... Oh, well, I didn't say that.
Yeah, where are we going to use the wireless of the Queen, Dylan?
I'm not sure. We need to go and do a site survey, I think.
You just use a huge Yagi. talking about...
Pick it up.
Talking about networks and wireless and wireless internet, I heard there was a great hack in Malaysia using 4G networks.
Yes. Apparently, there's an ISP in Malaysia that's claiming to have the world's first 4G network, which is obviously not true, mainly because it's not 4G. It's something more like 3.6G or 3.7G, if there's such a thing.
And how about the security of this 3.618G network?
Yeah, 3.615G. It sucks, basically. Like with most other networks that are rolled out, it's lots of settings haven't been set. Network routing isn't really routing properly. And overall, it's kind of a nightmare. Basically, we found issues. I will say issues in the network within 10 minutes after they launched, which isn't really good news for them, I guess.
No, totally true. Totally true. People never learning probably about exploits and setting up networks from the basic on a good level, isn't it?
Well, also, I mean, the thing is that they actually bought the network. Fryer in the US, and it appears that they didn't really change anything. They just plugged it in, turned it on, the lights were blinking. All's good, man. Let's go ahead. New ISP.
Damn.
So, interesting times. It was a nice Christmas present for us. Free internet, 15 megabits per second. Kind of nice.
Oh, that's
wireless.
Talking about hacks, Skype just came in. Skip.
What?
Skip, our friend. Skip, do you have any hacks for Nano for the moment?
What, now?
Yeah?
No.
We had to add you in. You probably with a hack, or at least with something about a hack.
Well, I was just asking you to help me with moving, and you add me to this conversation. I was just happy just listening to you guys.
You need some help, or at least some transport now?
No, I already got someone else. I needed some muscly man, so I don't, you know, I thought, fish, but got someone else.
Talking about hacking events, so I heard you're going to give a housewarming party, and are the listeners invited?
Well, why not? I mean, my little pilot is going to be a bit of it's going to be a bit of an experiment because, you know, I've got my real life buddies, I've got my hacker buddies, and I've got my gamer buddies, and they're like all invited, so it's going to be like one big weird party.
Just a cozy family.
Yeah, so it's going
to
be fun.
I need to get used to that. So, if people want to join Skip's housewarming party, just go to Freenode, and he's probably hanging around
random
somewhere
data.
In the random data channel. So,
Hackerspace Signal.
Yes, or in Hackerspace Signal.
So people should bring in the switch and some cables, well, and then...
Yeah.
I just totally freaked out there on my end. I can't stand you anymore.
Jumping over from housewarming, so we're going to jump over to Toronto. GMC, yeah, you prepared some stuff when you were over in Toronto.
Oh yeah, I went over to Toronto for a workshop, Control X Ethics. It was an interesting workshop about security research and ethics. I cannot disclose too much about it. We had some rules. Everyone could speak out freely on the condition that no one would bring to the outside what happened there. But I had some side activities as well. Of course, I couldn't resist visiting the various hackerspaces in Toronto. One of those is Site 3, and I spoke with Seth Hardy, who is one of the founders of this space. And, I think we should just go listen to it.
Site 3 is a relatively new hacker or maker space, whatever you want to call it. We started up last July. We're in Toronto. We have two floors in our own building. The downstairs is a shop space. It's been a metalworking space since at least the 1920s. Wow. And upstairs is a loft space that we use for classrooms, classroom space, workshops, special events, that sort of stuff.
Yeah, okay. And you already indicated it. It's a makerspace, hackerspace. You're not on hackerspaces.org.
Well,
that was on purpose, right?
Yeah. Well, we're fixing that now. But we basically wanted to distinguish ourselves from other hackerspaces in the area. We're more focused. We have more of a specific mission as opposed to the hackerspaces type of mission, which is be open to everything. We actually split off from hacklab.to mostly because that space is very small, so there was no room to actually use power tools or to do a lot of the larger project work that we wanted to do. So we sort of didn't want to step on any toes, didn't want to try to steal people away. We were just trying to present ourselves as more of a maker space. Where people go to use power tools and work on larger projects for art and technology, as opposed to the general mission of hackerspaces, which is to sort of teach and learn about pretty much anything.
No, and you've got some nice equipment. You've got a lathe, you've got a laser cutter. How is this financed? I mean, this is pretty expensive gear, of course.
Well, a lot of the equipment actually belongs to individual members who have either donated it to the space or it's just there on extended loan. A lot of the gear is, you know, the lathe was in somebody's garage for years and he's happy to have a place to put it where other people can use it. And as long as people don't kill themselves on it, he's happy to let other people use it. The laser was a personal purchase between myself and somebody else. We figured it would be a good way to get people in, and it's worked amazingly. People see the laser and go, oh, I want to be a member so I can use the laser. Eventually, it will be shop gear. Eventually, when we're doing better than breaking even, we're going to have a discretionary fund for tools that we can use to buy new equipment and pay back people for existing equipment. But not there yet.
Okay. So how many members do you have?
Right now, we've got two tiers. We've got core members who have a key and full access to the space, and associate members who don't have a key but are welcome to come by whenever the shop is open and use all the equipment. And right now, we've got about 15 core members, and I think only about 5 associate members, but that's because we're still sort of ramping up the associate member program.
Okay. Okay, so, and yeah, tell me a bit about the kind of projects that are going. When I visited, someone was building like a mechanical Pac-Man.
Yeah, Jonathan's working on a mechanical Pac-Man game in a sort of steampunk style. He's also built the typewriter that is Arduino controlled and can read inputs as well as type outputs. We have a couple of members who do prop making and various sorts of movie work. So there's all sorts of weird props around the shop. Really high quality leather working stuff by one of our guys who also does a lot of steampunk stuff. And other than the standard electronics, and you know, we've got a MakerBot that somebody's working on, we do fire art projects as well. So we did a really crazy installation for Burning Man last year. This giant steampunk heart sculpture that shoots 8 different jets of fire in the pulse of a heart. As well as, you know, I did a project where using a wireless EEG you can control a flamethrower with the power of your mind. So we did an installation for the city of Toronto that was a re-implementation of somebody else's fire project where you get to control 16 jets of fire using infrared distance sensors when standing on a platform. So
that
crazy stuff.
On first sight it sounds really unrefined, you know, throwing big flames in the air. But like you mentioned, the EEG, and you've been working on electronics to detect if there's still fire going on for safety. I mean, you combine it with really fine microelectronics as well, right?
Yep. That's what I do now. Is I've made a number of different custom PCBs to handle solenoid control. To do for the heart machine, it was communicating over CAN bus. So we had to write the software and make the hardware to do that communication area network implementation. Things like tip sensors using accelerometers. There's all sorts of custom hardware that we're making to sort of help other people who want to work with fire but don't have the means to make all the electronic control equipment themselves.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, cool. So maybe, I don't know, you might also be doing some lock picking in there. And actually, I was at the Hack Lab as well here in Toronto. And I saw this note on the door about, if you're here to ask us to do illegal things, please go away. And what's that all about?
Well, that unfortunately is due to a friend of mine, Byron. He was pretty much the only person who is picked up during G20, the G20 summit, for being a terrorist after the government spent about $1 billion, that's billion with a B, on security. And he was a HackLab member, and he liked to do things. He was opposed to the methods that they were using for security, and opposed to the fact that they spent so much money on ineffective security. So he was trying to highlight that it was ineffective.
Yeah.
So he did things like take pictures of security cameras. He also said that he was going to monitor unencrypted frequencies and find police broadcasts and retransmit them on Twitter to benefit protesters. Which is perfectly legal. He was protesting the fact that they spent all of this money on new equipment, new radios, where you couldn't do this, and yet so much of the police force communication is still unencrypted. They're just not using the equipment they spent taxpayer dollars on. So he also did things like said that he was going to buy explosives precursors just as a way to see if the man was watching. And that's what got him in trouble.
Okay.
So he got picked up right before it happened for being a terrorist. They don't really have anything on him because everything he bought was legal. Everything he did, as far as I know, was legal. So they had to get him on things like weapons dangerous charge because he had a spud gun in his cottage, which every Canadian does. So he's currently still in jail. It's been about 6 months. He hasn't had a trial yet. He's had his bail denied, so he's just sitting there in a cell waiting eventually for the trial to come up. And from what I've heard over the HackLab mailing list is that due to the timing, a lot of kind of sketchy people are coming in and saying, oh, you guys are hackers, and this guy was a member here. Can you teach me how to do something that's illegal? Okay. And whether that's law enforcement trying to entrap people or the media coverage bringing out some of the crazies in the public, don't know. Mm-hmm. But the media coverage has been almost 100% positive, both towards Byron and towards HackLab, as it should, because they're just they're all telling the truth and the facts about what happened, and it's all, you know, this guy's getting screwed, and HackLab does, you know, electronics work, they do computer security work, they do all sorts of good technology work, but apparently there's been an uptick in people coming by and asking about illegal things, and the standard response that they said was to just politely ask the person to leave if they do that, because they're not, HackLab isn't in the business of doing illegal stuff, Site3 isn't in the business of doing illegal stuff. We're, you know, it's been a while since I've been to HackLab, but I, as one of the founders, I think that we definitely set it up as a place to share knowledge and do good things as opposed to doing anything illegal.
Yeah, well, I went there recently and it's still the case. Is that also what motivated not calling Site3 a hackerspace? Did that influence your...
Yeah, we just wanted to avoid the computer security stuff.
Yeah.
So we didn't want to have people come by and say, hey, can somebody teach me how to install Linux on my computer?
Okay, yeah.
So people like that occasionally did say, oh, I heard you're a hackerspace, and they're like, can you help me with Linux stuff? And we're like, can you go to HackLab? Because that's more of what they do. If you'd like to learn how to use a circular saw, we can do that here.
Okay.
And so, it's just a difference in focus. A lot of the things are the same. Like, we both do a lot of Arduino work, for example, a lot of electronics. It's just that the focus is a little different between the two spaces.
Well, cool. So if people want to find out more about Site3 or any of the projects, where should they go?
We have a website, site3.ca.
Okay, that's easy enough. Well, thanks.
Thank you.
I hope to be back soon in Toronto.
Yeah, awesome.
Keep you. it is gone. Yeah, it's gone. Yeah, it's gone. Yeah, it's gone. You're to blame for taking my love. Yeah, it's gone. Yeah, it's gone. Yeah, it's gone. Yeah, it's gone. You're to blame for taking it all. Yeah, it's gone. Yeah, it's gone. Yeah, it's gone. Yeah, it's gone. You're to blame for taking my love.
That was Gone by, what's his name? Lou Dog. That is not Lead Dog, but Lou Dog. So, meanwhile, we have on the line, all the way from Hawaii, Cherry, are you there?
Aloha.
He is there. Wow.
Flying from...
how are you?
Flying from Toronto to Hawaii, wow. This is Fish speaking. I heard you, you're sitting somewhere on a special place, not in a hackerspace?
No, I'm sitting at a coffee shop in Paia.
Oh.
A wonderful little coffee shop called the Hasbeen.
Is that the kind of coffee shop we know in Amsterdam, like Lee Dog?
I don't know. I've never been to Amsterdam, so I can't tell you.
You know what I mean with coffee shops in Amsterdam, It's usually the place where you can smoke some grass. Sorry for that.
So Jerry, you've been working on the makerspace Maui actually, and I heard you recently got into a building and have already started classes. Is that right?
Well, we're still in the process of chasing down a what I'm referring to as a mutually. Inconvenient or equally inconvenient location to everybody. Maui has a fairly distributed environment here. We only have about 120,000 permanent residents on the island, and another half a million people come through a year. But we're spread out over a fair bit of this this beautiful island. People are major. Portions of the island are 50 miles apart, and they're not very great roads between them. They're basically small two-lane roads that they connect the island, so it's kind of hard to get around sometimes. People don't like to get around, and they get used to not going anywhere. So finding a location which suits us and is centrally located enough to bring enough people together has been one of my big challenges. But we have a lot of very excited people on the island looking to join up and get involved.
So one of the options you've been thinking about is actually doing something movable, right? Like either with a container and a trailer or maybe a boat even?
Yes. I've been looking at some of the various mobile spaces that have been promoted. There's... the Fab Lab here in the U.S. or on the mainland has one. They've got a big 40-foot trailer or something that they drag around. And I've seen several trucks and so forth over there in Europe, which have been modified to be spaces that they can drive around to different people. I think there's several there in your area. And those are very attractive. Having a small trailer or something, I can put the laser cutter and some electronics or some other equipment in and drive it out to the other end of the island and bring it to the community center or to the high schools and teach classes on it there. I think it's one of the only ways we're going to reach a lot of the people.
Well, one of our friends...
As well as having a space.
One of her friends, Meredith, she was talking in the last Hackerspace Hour together with me and Dr. Wex about doing this on containers on large cargo ships and so on. It should be awesome to have a place in Hawaii to station your hackerspace, man.
It's a dream that I think has a lot of great potential, and a lot of people have offered to come over and teach classes. I'm looking forward to the time when we can offer vacations to people to come into Maui, spend a week in Maui, and do 3 days learning how to run a laser cutter and another 4 days playing on the beach.
Well, sign me up for that. So you're not new to hackerspaces and makerspaces. You were involved with CrashSpace in Los Angeles, right?
Yeah, I was one of the early people involved in CrashSpace, along with Sean Bonner and Carlin Ma and Todd Porter and several of the other people there. About a year and change ago, a year ago October was when they started, and very quickly they managed to pull together and find a great location there in Culver City on a great busy street, and that space has gone gangbusters. Really wonderfully community that popped up around it very quickly. And amazingly, it happened with very little equipment in the space. Many spaces are talking, well, in order to have, you know, get our space and attract people, we need to have a laser cutter, and we have to have a CNC mill, and we have to have all this and that and the other. CrashSpace did it for probably 4 to 6 months without any real equipment other than tables, chairs, and benches. And then stuff was donated and appeared. And now they've got more than enough equipment, CNC mills and laser cutters and so forth that's there, and they're very active.
Oh, they are. Is that, the CrashSpace is also very active in organizing classes, getting people into, to learn new skills. Is that also something you are doing again in the Maui Makerspace?
Oh, most definitely. I already taught a class at my home last December. I taught people how to solder electroluminescent wire. And that was quite an interesting experience. One for me, actually, teaching my first class and things, and having the rather diverse small group that we had. I only had about 10 people there, but it turned out to be a perfect number of them, a perfect mix of artists who had never picked up a soldering iron in their past, to accomplished soldering electronics experts, to agricultural people. And these are all the sorts of people we have that are interested in our space. We have our own local Burning Man festival called Source here in Maui coming up in the end of February, and I've been involved with them on several art projects and have plans next year, when I actually have time to work on it, to build several interesting fire sculptures and so forth. And then the artists and the ag people, agricultural things are a big part here. We're looking for teaching classes to people on how to do aquaponics, which is growing fish and using a
growing fish?
Somewhat closed system for fish, tilapia or catfish, and using the water biofilter to feed the plants.
Wow. So,
and the plants purify the water, and it comes back around through the system.
Cool.
So you're really engaging there. Go ahead.
There are a number of people doing similar things here on the island, and several of our members are very interested and involved in it and starting up their own projects on separately in their garages, and are very interested in teaching classes and having classes in it. So it's definitely one of the other areas. It's sort of a little bit different than many hacker spaces in that we do intend to do agricultural projects as well.
Hey Jerry, we at least in Holland, we have a very romantic idea about Hawaii. That you see the ladies walking in their small skirts and so on, and we think Hawaii should be a very interesting place and how you say that, inspiring. How do you see that these makers are combining these kind of ideas we have at least with making stuff?
Well, you have some good views and some correct views on parts of Maui, and Hawaii. There, as I'm sitting here at the coffee shop, the women have been walking by in short dresses and so forth, and it does make quite a beautiful place to watch. It is extremely inspiring. We have quite a diverse community, from high tech to the artists to the tourist industry. There's the surfboard and sailboard and kitesurfing folks.
Wow.
The sport was originated here on Maui, and in one of the locations I've been looking at, there are four different board manufacturers in the same building. Some of them you do hand shaping, and some of them use machines, big CNC machines, to build their projects. They're excited about the idea of a makerspace and having the stuff available, and possibly using letting people use their machines for other things. Of course, it would be a fee to use the machines, but if we can get small businesses working with it, that would be phenomenal.
Totally true. Totally true. It seems to be that we have to visit another place, GMC.
Yeah, Colin needs to come out here for a visit. I ran into him in Philadelphia at Hive 76, and after following his tour of the American spaces, the U.S. spaces, once we get things running, we're definitely going to have a maker fair out here and invite people from all around the world to come and enjoy our island and share your talents with us here.
Wow, very nice. I'm going to keep an eye on this. We are slightly running out of time here. The show is almost over. We have a special breaking session in a few minutes. More on that later. I want to thank you for being on the line. You had to interrupt the business meeting for it, I believe. So we're very grateful for that. And yeah, I wish you the best of luck with Maui Makers.
Thank you very much. Mahalo.
All started on a Saturday. These things they always do. Somewhere between homesickness and the color blue. Got worse by Sunday. These things they always do. The world keeps pushing on you. I wonder what's the point of going on. There's something wrong with everything I make. God gives us little, but Lord, does he take. Someone came to fix the boiler, and now it works less than before. I can't feel my fingers, and there's water on the floor. But I've had some space, and I realize it now. You can sidestep the sadness, and I'll tell you how. Do it like Zinedine Zidane. Turn a loose ball to a goal if you can. Do it like Zinedine Zidane. It's not about the ball, it's about the man. Sacked on Monday. They saw the stone look on my face. Now I'm stuck between a rock and a hard place. I've got absolutely no money. The girl I love doesn't love me. I'm losing my mind, and I've lost my key. But I've calmed down, and I realize it all now. You can easily sidestep the sadness, and this is how. Do it like Zinedine Zidane. Think outside of the box if you can. Think like Zinedine Zidane. Understand the game like the back of your hand. Can't know what I mean.
I finally had it out with my neighbor's dog. He's been pissing on my roses for way too long.
And we're back at the Dev Random Show of Hackerspace's Signal. In the meanwhile, we are preparing a phone call to Tunis, but first we're going to talk a little bit about the agenda. What's coming up? We have Uganda 256 Con, and I didn't find the website of the conference itself, but it is on hackerspaces.org. For Bits of Freedom, we're going to have the Big Brother Awards. It's on the 9th March, and it's done by Bits of Freedom. Okay, you're familiar with the Big Brother Awards. Can you tell the people what it is?
Well, it's a show about the where they give awards away to the best. It's like how you call it in Dutch, the Lode Leeuw.
The what?
The Lode Leeuw for worst commercial. This is like for okay. Most privacy.
The best of the worst.
Yeah, so if you violate privacy somehow, then you get the award. And last year it was very crowded. It was in the. I don't know, it was somewhere in Amsterdam.
It's about the biggest leak of information, isn't it?
Yeah. It's very, very nice show, and they're doing a wonderful job.
It's not just leaks. It's Bits of Freedom is watching digital rights online, and it's basically the company or organization that violates the rights.
Yeah, you're right, because people could think about that it's a WikiLeaks or so. It's about who's violating the digital laws and. Yeah. Sounds like a fun event, and it's quite huge. Access Roll was one of the guys who was supporting Bits of Freedom, also known by Leedog, of course. Access Roll, isn't it, Leedog?
Yes, of course.
He is. talking about other events, Easter Hack Hockey. You know something about it?
Yeah.
It's from 22 until 25th of April.
Yeah, it's from Goede Vrijdag. I don't know. It's like Kar Vrijdag in Germany. The Easter egg is the CCC Hacker Family Reunion. And this will take place in the wonderful party city of Hamburg.
Hamburg,
a Reeperbahn, whatever.
Best hamburgers in town.
I don't know if they have hamburgers in there.
But probably there are people, or at least living people over there.
Hamburg. Well, they have like workshops there, and they have barbecues and a lot of creativity with techniques, blinking lights. And last year, a lot of people were starting soldering on the badge. They gave away a badge, and it was like with a blinking thing in a bunny, and then you could add a lot of stuff to it. So
like functionality or just hardware hacks.
Well, hardware hacks, and you can program it and whatever, and. But it was very crowded, this room. It was so...
How many people are joining the Easter Egg Hockey?
I don't know. It's like...
100, 200, 300?
It's mostly people from the CCC, Germany, Switzerland, maybe some Luxembourgers. Some Dutch will come over, Dutch.
So it sounds like fun, at least. Yeah. Hey, we just came up on the Source event at Hawaii. It's in the end of February. It's probably somewhere... if you Google it, I couldn't find it just in a few seconds. We have Hackito in Paris. Dylan, you are going to Hackito.
Yeah, it should be fun. It's in the first week of April, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah, it's organized by the guys of Templab.
Yeah, it's from the guys from Templab. It should be a good show, actually. The speaker committee that's in charge of, you know, selecting the papers is actually made up of a really, really good group of people. Actually, they make a quite a nice speaker list. In fact,
it's a quite familiar group, which is also involved with Hack in the Box, isn't it?
Yeah, one of our we would say affiliates, friends of HITV, one of those things.
Okay, hey, to end with the agenda. We have to. To say that at least Hack in the Box is coming up in May, and I think that's it for now. In the meanwhile, GMC, were you able to give a call to Tunis?
Yes, people were expecting a show from Detroit at 11, but Social Hack.
Social Hack is on the line.
Social Hack is on the line.
Hey, Social Hack, how are you doing? This is Fish.
He's not paying attention apparently.
He's drinking Club Mato probably. Or don't they have it over there? Social Hack, are you there?
Hello.
That's not so sure. He's restarting his Skype actually. So
damn Skype.
Please go on.
In the meanwhile, we just go. I just finished my agenda, man.
Come on, improvise.
Yeah, we always have something to improvise.
Oh, we can tell something about CTF at High Tibet.
We can. I have Thomas now on the line. There is Thomas.
Oh,
hi, Thomas.
Yes, Thomas.
Yes, hello.
Thomas Socialek, how are you doing?
I'm fine.
Where are you calling from today?
Skype, therefore I was not online. Yes, I'm fine. I just came from work and it has been quite busy days. I had many interviews with people from Arab right now, but this chance for Tunis is quite important. Therefore, I think we have to interrupt the program.
Absolutely. So that's exactly what we are going to do now. People waiting for Detroit, it will come right after Social Hack. Social Hack, you're connected. The line is yours.
But I think we can do this interview, the three of us, with our Tunisian guest. Do you have him on the line as well?
Yes, he should be on the line. Are you there?
Yes, I'm here.
Ah, great.
Do you hear me?
Yes, yes, we can hear you. It's a pleasure to have you with us. And I don't know if it is necessary to give some introduction. I mean, I found you over the Hackerspaces Wiki and Tagritz, the place where you're coming from, is some tremendous organization. And I think we should start with the space you're coming from. And can you tell us something about that?
Yeah, we're coming from Tunis. Originally, Tagritz was founded in 98. We were from the first people in North Africa to have access to the online. And we started like doing activism there. Like we hung out there. We worked on security, worked on like everything in society and everything. And then like the government went on internet probably in 99, later in 99. And then they realized there was Tagritz and they didn't like it. So they censored it. And actually that pissed us off. And we started attacking the government on basis of truth and on how it was treating and torturing people and how injustice was there and how corruption and how dictatorship was bad. And it escalated. So there was a manhunt on us. And we were pretty tough on security. I think we started with SSH like from its beginning. We had a Silk server, IRC server, and then we moved to Silk and we were like using Mumble and stuff. So then we managed to, some of us managed to escape, some others managed to stay anonymous. And we're spread out all over the world and working online. And now like revolution is in Tunisia and we helped a lot relay the information because everything was hacked, censored, sorry. And the media, local media was not broadcasting anything. They were not saying anything was happening there. So we helped a lot and, today, like Tunisia is living something historical, so and internet helped a lot, so that's good. Mm-hmm.
Maybe you could give us some introduction and some picture of the internet in Tunisia, especially in contrast to what we are used in the West or somewhere else in the world.
Yeah, I have my friends on the Mumble server. They want to say hi.
Of course. Hello.
So like there's a bunch of Tunisian people now working still. Internet censorship was started in 2000. We were the first site, first server to be censored. Actually, all the servers, all our servers were banned. And we started like doing a lot of repost. We started campaigning against censorship. And then censorship escalated a lot. Lately, before the revolution, when the revolution started, there was so many blogs that were censored. Everything that discussed anything related to the protests or something like that were censored. All media, all media articles talking about that were censored. And it was a tough battle. So far now, from the censorship has gone. No, from the 14th, censorship has gone. So now we can have a free internet, except I think porn sites, they're still blocked. But other than that, we're still battling because the government was so corrupt and it was a very tough dictatorship. that even the guys that are now in the interim government are coming from there. So we have to be very careful that their promises are kept, and we have to still fight, because there are some of them that are really, really bad guys. And I mean, we didn't even have time to celebrate like the dictator Ben Ali escape, because he escaped. And we're still battling, and there's still protests, and there's still information we relay online, and there's still hangouts, like you heard, like with the people that are actually doing the collection of the media and putting it back and trying to organize actions, because we do some actions offline as well, since we are anonymous, and we operate in small groups that are not anonymous, and like the small groups, they have one person that comes to the main Takriz group, and then like we dispatch information, we try to organize actions, and it's working so far. It's good. It's been 5 weeks, I think. I didn't sleep much, and nobody slept much, because it's really tense. And we're advancing. We're trying to secure democracy and true democracy. We're trying to get rid of all the judges that are corrupt. We're trying to do a lot of things to the country. And this is actually something we've been fighting for more than, 98. So it's more like 13 years now, or something like that. So it's like, it's been a long time. So, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Wow. I understand there are also some part of the actions of the government. It was sort of like a cyber war being fought out between the people and the government. I heard that the government actually installed sort of Trojans via JavaScript. Yeah,
they did very dirty things. So what they basically did on the mail accounts and Facebook accounts and Twitter accounts, since all these sites, they force you to use HTTPS at login. So they blocked the 443 port. And then apparently some of the sites allow you still to log in without HTTPS. So they blocked that port, and they kind of disguised the login page or something like that. And people were using the non-encrypted login pages. And like the password were sniffed, and then some accounts were hacked, especially for the people that were really relaying a lot of media or doing like, some kind of activism against this dictatorship. And they blocked their account. And as a matter of fact, some of them were arrested. And actually today, most of them are released. And I think all of them are released, like the people from online and the bloggers. But they still couldn't get their accounts back. So it's like, yeah.
So they were using SSL stripping these sites and lowering the security of this website so they could gather the information.
Yeah, that's what they did, actually. Yeah, that's what they did. And when the last day of the first revolution, where Ben Ali was forced to leave and to escape.
Tell
me.
Now, since everything is coming more clear, is there more information coming up how the government was controlling the people?
No. There's no transparency still. Because there is still, the friends of Ben Ali are still in power. So we there is no transparency, and we're fighting for that. The only thing we know now is like internet is not censored that much, and so far we didn't hear our website is still accessible from Tunisia. Slowly we'll find out. What we've heard that the Tunisian government hires 700 people. Doing what we call cyber police. So they can kind of, report on people, try to infiltrate networks, try to get into some Facebook accounts, to Facebook pages, Facebook profiles of some people that relay some information that's very negative to the government, or very negative to the government either. And what happened is these people now, they're not they're not censoring, because those were the people that were as soon as one information against the regime was the Tunisian regime was popping out, they cut it, right? And they filter it. Now what they're doing propaganda kind of against the protests, and doing soft censorship, saying going and trolling the comments and saying, oh, listen, it's not good to go to protests, and doing all this kind of stuff. And they're lurking even on Twitter. When they see something bad, they would pop up and send a message. No, this is not true. No, our government is good now. Ben Ali is gone. It's okay. Don't worry about it. They're nice people. And everybody knows that they're not nice people, because they've been working with Ben Ali for 23 years, and nobody said anything bad about him, and nobody resigned, or nobody showed any kind of humanity towards the population that Ben Ali was actually torturing and killing and doing all this nasty stuff to it. So I don't know what's going to happen to these people, the poor people. I think they're going to soon be fired or something. But it's still like the battle is still going on. And so far, like we're in touch with the Pirate Party in Tunisia, which is doing a lot of good work. It helped a lot spread the words on Tor, on ways to bypass censorship. And like, you know, the Tunisian now kind of you can censor them from anywhere. I think they will find a way to find the information and to relay it, and send it by email, on either on USB keys or either on CD-ROMs, you know, all the alternative ways that kind of bypass any way they can bypass this online censorship. So it's like that.
What I wonder is, there were many rumors in the Western press that this is the WikiLeaks revolution or the Twitter revolution. And I would like to hear your opinion. What was the cause of this current protest? Was it really an excessive use of new media, or was it just an educated youth which had no perspective on wealth, on jobs, on real democracy? What's the reason you can give why this happened at this current days?
I'll give you my analysis, because it's very hard to understand. I think it started with some young guy. He was in his 20s, mid-20s, and he was he's got like a university degree, and he's got no job, and he was forced to sell like vegetables and fruits in the street market. And corruption was made on him by the city officials, but nevertheless, they kind of didn't allow him to work. So he was like, he went to the point where he didn't find any solution to that. He tried to talk to the city officials, the mayor, and he didn't want to receive him. So what happened? He put himself on fire in front of the city hall. And that thing was recorded, and there was some protest afterwards from his friends at the market and other friends and family, and like, you know, the people that heard in that local area. It's Sidi Bouzid. It's in the center of Tunis, Tunisia. And so that with the video phones, and with the internet, Tunisia is 10 million people, 11 million people population, and there's 2 million people online, with more than a million and something on Facebook. So we got that information, we got that media. That started from, as I told you, someone who was really, really out of his mind. He didn't understand that. He sacrificed himself just to expose what was going on there. And that was like a very courageous thing, and people got it at that, and the information was flowing, especially on Facebook. Twitter came in later on. And with the protests, the people that protested were not heard, and the TV, local TV and local media didn't even treat that thing. They waited 1 week to talk about it, and when they talked about it as it was like a stupid thing, and that guy was a stupid guy or something like that. And that actually made people more angry, and protests got widened and like, you know, touched other cities. And that at the end, it was attached a little bit the capital, and that like made the Twitter and everything talk about it maybe a week before. But then when started at Twitter, and then like, you know, the protests got bigger in Tunis, and Ben Ali was forced to escape. As my analysis on the reason for this was, there is, as a matter of fact, there is a problem of unemployment. But I don't think unemployment and money and all that thing is the main reason. It's the reason, probably it's there, but there are others like freedom, like freedom of expression, like the corrupted media we have, like the way like the officials, even at the city level, even at level 3, they don't care about the people. They don't care about the people. They don't hear the people. The parliament that didn't talk about it. They talk the president in his first two speeches, he was talking about like terrorists and people like doing protests. This is not a good way to be a good citizen or something like that. That even like made the population more angry. That's one. Internet helped a lot. because with the media blackout, the TV blackout, the newspaper blackout, there was internet, and the journalists were not allowed to get into Tunisia. No journalist was covering this. Even like the journalists got into Tunisia the last week before Ben Ali escaped. So Al Jazeera was doing a lot on the satellite TVs because we have in Tunisia, almost every house has a satellite dish. France 24 did also a good job in the beginning. And the all other information was coming from video phones and relayed on the online. And then Al Jazeera and France 24 were using those information. And the last week, I'd say by January 7th, January 10, like there was a lot of journalists. They came, you know, because there was pressure from outside of Tunisia, and they came like journalists from BBC, CNN, all the major media. They came there, even France, and they were taking their own videos and their own pictures. And the other thing, internet helped a lot because it made the information go to everybody. And the fact that no media was covering it gave us the opportunity to channel the right message to our population. But the people that were outside of Tunisia didn't get that message. They were thinking, oh, okay, this guy, maybe they have an unemployment problem. And we do have an unemployment problem. But I think all this revolt was not only about unemployment. It was something really profound about, like, people were aware. And the WikiLeaks helped a lot because it brought proof and documents on how the corruption is there and how the president was it was treated like he and his family were like a mafia. Everybody knows it, and a lot of people thought maybe, oh, okay, the U.S. didn't know about it, or didn't care about it. When they saw that even the U.S. Was like, you know, they had these reports from the U.S. embassies, they thought like, yeah, this is going nowhere, you know. And like they saw many things in these WikiLeaks files, and it helped a lot also, wake the people and make the Bouazizi, that's the guy who set himself to fire. I mean, he showed a very courageous message, and people that used to be very, very scared in Tunisia got to the point where there were no fear left, you know. And many people died by police shooting on them, and they didn't even shoot on the legs or the bellies, or they shot on the heads, you know, on the heads, on the torsos. Was like, yeah, let's don't care about you. You could die. Don't protest. Go home. And that actually, you know, we got the videos. Students at the hospitals took videos from their camera phones and from their, like, you know, cameras. The one that had cameras, and they were sent to us by online, and we relayed that, and many other people also relayed that information. And you know, the injustice was exposed, kind of, and it made everybody think, and it made everybody think deeply on what's the causes and why we came to this point and who's responsible for that. And all of that, like, you know, made this revolution very quick, and people got the courage and went out, and, you know, there were tear bombs everywhere and everything, but people stood there, and like, you know, their words were heard, and Ben Ali escaped. And now there's still protests. It's more peaceful now. There's no deaths. I think they can't afford to kill anybody now. And so now it's more peaceful, the protests, and not that much repression. And we are still looking to get, like, to the point where there is this, like, you know, a separation of power in the state, like a state of law and democracy, freedom, you know, some concepts like that that are really, truly, fundamentally done, you know, like not talking about democracy is not something you sell on TV. It's something you have to see and live and everything. And now we know still that there are still people in today's government in Tunisia that was changed about 10 days ago. I mean, there are still people in it that are known to be tortured, that are known to be corrupt, and this is no go for people. And I mean, internet is still now that's not censored. I mean, there's a lot of young people even older people that are getting the right information, and they're getting to politics, because politics was something we didn't talk about that much. For the people that were not doing activism or something, they didn't care about politics. They didn't know even the names of these people, you know. And now everything got exposed, and people understood. People understood the meaning, at least, of a free information, you know, a free internet, and you do your mind, like you find the information, you can access it, you can analyze it, you can discuss it, and you can deny it, you can do whatever, you can talk about it. And now we see like a lot of people doing videos and talking and, you know, getting engaged in this society. And this is what, this is the most important thing in every democracy, I guess. Without that, you can't sell a democracy on a plate and say, okay, this is democracy, go eat it. I mean, democracy is something you have to be active in it, and you have to protect its core basis. And I hope it's a fight. It's a never-ending fight, I guess, so far. And it's going to continue, and it's getting like more organized fight, which is less violent and less more clear. The message is getting more clear, because in the beginning, the message was like, you know, people were like fed up, you know, that's it. That's the word for Takriz. Also, Takriz in English is like fed up. And that's the situation where everybody was in, like 5 weeks ago. So I think that's it.
Mm-hmm. I absolutely agree with everything you just said about democracy, and I wonder, now that you've got all these young people involved into this infrastructure and the internet and this communication ways, what do you do right now? How do you want to achieve this implementation of democracy, get rid of all the people who are still trying to hold on power? What are the next steps you are planning to do, or the goals you are reaching in the short term?
Okay, this is a very good question, because the problem now we're facing in Tunisia, it's not the motivation of the people to go to the streets or to ask for their rights. It's the inability and incapacity of the opposition of some alternative that would come in, step in, and propose stuff. So the opposition was not organized, and they didn't even believe that there were a revolution. And until the last day, some of them were still negotiating with Ben Ali and stuff like that. But the thing also, I mean, yeah, Ben Ali didn't let them work, so they were not organized at all, and it was like a joke. And everybody knew that they were jogged. Now, what we're looking for, first of all, I think, to get the people in a situation where they become constructive. To get to that point, I think it's needed that all people that were close friends of Ben Ali in the other government, which is pretty much like this new government, except that Ben Ali is not there. So we want all those people to resign, or to be held in custody, or to be held at home, you know, with their bank account frozen, because they are very frozen, at least to external wire transfer, international wire transfer, with their phones with their phones blocked or under surveillance, and that there is a judicial commission that they're gonna see who of these people is responsible, at what level he's responsible, because there were people there, ministers. Prime Minister, for example, who's now Prime Minister still, he was under the Ben Ali government, and he knew about the killing, and he knew about everything, and he didn't even say one word. He didn't even show anything that he was against all that. He didn't resign. He didn't say anything. He didn't even leave some paper words like saying, oh, I'm doing this because they are forcing me to do that, or, like, you know. So these people, everybody now is asking for justice to be done. We're not, we don't want justice like that. We know it's going to take time. But at least that these people step out of the government, because what's happening now, that there is a lot of documents, a lot of proofs that is being buried and being burned and being, like, you know, hidden. And that's like, you know, we're wasting time, and people are getting to the point where they're still fed up now, and very fed up, because this is a masquerade what they're doing now. They're selling democracy on the TV, but then it's the same people. So they changed kind of a little bit, but on ministries that are not important, you know, like education ministry. I don't see how maybe there's some corruption there or something, but it's not like a prime ministry. It's not like a interior ministry. It's not like a finance ministry or something like that. So, yeah, we're asking that. What, as a matter of fact, I mean, the problem is that the opposition is not, there is no civil society. They're not like, there is youth on the street. There's workers on the streets. But on the back end, there's nobody who's doing his job in the right way so far. And I think they're getting organized, and they believe that there is revolution, and they believe that the revolution will not end today, because we're asking for a second independence kind of in Tunisia. It's going to be a second independence, an independence from a dictatorship and the installation of a real democracy. Everybody understands this is going to take time, that there is sacrifices to be done. And I mean, yeah, they need like some part of the population that's in its 40s and 50s and everything, and that's not really active at all, and they've never been active. Those are our parents, and they were like all the time telling us to shut up because otherwise you'll get kicked or otherwise you'll get arrested. They didn't even allow us to express ourselves. Our parents, and our professors and our teachers, everybody, you couldn't even talk with them because they were like, no, you're crazy, you're going to get killed or you're going to get arrested, oh, shut up and everything. So these people now are kind of slowly waking up. And I believe these people have the capacity, and even the young people in Tunisia, they have the capacity, because we are like educated people. We do a lot of, like, education is quite high, education level is quite high in Tunisia. And but you can't expect for the youth to think about it in politics or something like that. They want stuff, real stuff. And I think there's a part of the civil society that's waking up a little bit. It's kind of late, but it's not that bad. And I believe we could get to a point where at least the people that are in power are not so imposed by power. They're not so needing power inhumane way, This, there'll be new people. It's okay. These new people, they would they would be first, they would have the power, but it's going to be constrained by the power of the people. And the people now showing that they have power. They can go to the street, they can protest, they can do strikes, they can do stuff. And that will counterbalance, that would be, that would do the right balance for the other people to treat the people in power, to treat their people the citizens of Tunisia as, respectfully and with with a bit of transparency, and with, they don't think they have the total power on them. They have some power, right? And that's okay. For order and for, but then they have to be responsible and they have to show respect and they have to. And that's what actually now the fight is, and it's going to be a longer fight than the 4 weeks revolution. It's going to be a little bit longer. But we're prepared to that, and I'm really, really surprised about how the people changed, and how the people were like kind of very educated, but they just were afraid. There was the fear. The fear was the something that prevented Tunisia from doing this last year, or 2 years ago, or 3 years ago, or 4 years ago. And the circumstances made that fear disappear. And the government tried, actually, after Ben Ali left, the government tried to make the people frighten the people so that they kind of accept anything, I'm frightened now. So there were a lot of killing and militias controlled by the government. They were like doing shooting in the air with cars, and people were forced to protect their neighborhoods. We didn't leave that. Tunisia, there was no firearms before. It's not a country like other countries where there is firearms and stuff. It was like really, really... a peaceful country. It wasn't like a country where firearms, you'll see firearms or you hear fire guns or something like that, shooting. So they tried that for 3 nights, but the civil society got really, really organized on that defensive stand, and they were really they were really, really responsible, and they got eradicated, and now they're selling us democracy on a plate. We said no. Then now they try and tricks, let's dissolve the party. They dissolved the party of Ben Ali. But then they dissolved the party, but all these people are free. And they're like half of the government today is like the main position in the government is from this party, even if they resigned from the party. So in the news, they say, oh, they resigned from the party. And people they're not stupid anymore. So yeah, I believe we have done good way, and I'm like happy with the population, how they think, and I hope they stand, and I hope things get better, and I hope we get rid of these people that don't want good for their population. It's stupid. You have power, right? You have money, corruption, everything, but at the end of the day, if you're not honest, you're not gonna sit. Like Ben Ali, he stayed there 23 years, he did whatever he wanted. And at the end, he couldn't control the people. He could not. He made his last speech was like Ceausescu's speech. nobody cared about him anymore. So yeah, this is what this is the situation right now. I mean, it's positive. There was a lot of good things. I mean, internet is free and people can protest today. Like you go for 22 years till this event started, like a month ago, like a month and a week now, till this event started. Nobody protested in Tunisia. We never did any protest. We never seen any protest. You know, maybe like, we don't know these protests. You know? We saw them on the street. And internet helped a lot. And TechRiz helped a lot because we relay sometimes when there's, because, you know, it's dictatorship. And sometimes like there's no news, nothing happening. I mean, we talk about, that's why we get into hacking. We got into some WikiLeaks thing. Some of our members are involved in the WikiLeaks. There are some other members involved in pirate parties, some other members involved in other humanitarian things, you know, everywhere, like international, on an international basis, because there's nothing that was happening in Tunisia for a long time. But what I was going to say, yeah, there was nothing happening in Tunisia, and now today, like all of a sudden, like we have many things happening, and it's really interesting. It's really, really interesting, and that's it. I mean, before the revolution, we were broadcasting actually, yeah, all the unrest that happened in France, that happened in England, that happened in Italy, that happened in Greece, you know. And we were showing that, you know, so like, look, this is some type of people. Although there was violence in this videos, and we don't know if it's not controlled by, like, it's not like media influenced that. I'm sure there were people protesting without violence, but the media would pick up only the violence. And so we showed that, and we were like discussing about it on our Facebook page and our, like, you know, internally. And we're like, you know, look at them and look at us. Why don't we have any kind of protest? Well, we never protested. And I think that helped a lot too, because we have a base of 15,000 fans on Facebook, like a page, and we have a Facebook page, and we have like 15,000 people there. So I kind of, you know, it takes time, but they end up relaying information, and information gets, that's how you kind of diffuse information. And that worked, and today I'm happy. I mean, today I'm happy with the work we did. We're really tired because we didn't sleep for like 5 weeks. We sleep like 3-4 hours a day. Tomorrow there is still protest. Today there was like a magic protest, you know, and it was crazy protest because we wanted the building of this unique political party that's been going for since 56, this party. And Ben Ali came, he took the party, and he changed his name and the same party, you know. And there was a lot of people in front of the party building, and they managed to remove the name of the party from the building. And that was like a very, very great message, and a message of hope for many people, and a message that's showing how we could have been living better, although we were not that bad compared to other countries, but we could have been living better. We could have been living in a better state. I mean, I've been talking to one guy today, and he said, like, you know, this revolution is like, it's better than my girlfriend. It's better than my work. It's better than studies. It's like, I'm in love with this revolution that's happening now. You know, people are kind of like really happy about it. And thank God there's no violence, you know, from the protesters. There's not excessive violence. There's no violence, no killing, no clashes with the police, except them, like, you know, firing tear bombs or sometimes beating like the first lines of the protests. But I think we Tunisian, if now they cannot do it, they're not, I mean, they will never do it. But I think we have a population that's ready for this. We have a situation that's kind of tough also, that there is a lot of regionalism. There is some regions that are more rich than others. There's many things to be done underground, but we have to continue. We have to remove all the bad roots, all the bad guys from there, and starting from clean, like, you know, a clean and empty, like, yeah, from a clean state, we can build up. If we're ready, we'll build up something good. If we're not ready, I mean, that's it. We're not ready. I'm not like, you know, it's just it's the people call, you know, that's it.
I think a clean state won't be achieved because you can't remove all of these people just by the fact that you cannot identify everyone who was somehow involved in the last government. But I see some signs that the right people are going to power. For example, there's one person from your pirate party, which is now part of this government, not as a minister, but as far as I found out, as a kind of secretary, state secretary of education or something. One pressing issue is, as far as I understood it, that your constitution says that after 60 days, you have to make new elections. And this would be quite a tough time frame to sort things out, to identify the people who were involved into the corrupt government, and if not get them into custody, then at least spread the information about who was somehow involved in the old party and who is really part of the opposition. Because otherwise, I think the people will go to vote maybe with good intentions, and maybe the will for a restart is in the majority. But still, if you can't identify the good from the bad forces, if you can't separate them, then at the end of the elections, you would still have people in power who are just trying to continue the old regime.
Yeah, you're right. Just one correction. They extended the 60 days to 6 months, as far as I know. I don't know how it will stand. Nobody is actually caring about that from the people I'm talking. The majority of the people are not caring about this 6 months or 60 days or something. I understand you and how it's very difficult to get a clean start. I'm not saying that we have to get every 11 million Tunisians, we get every one of them and see how corrupt they are and everything. No, I'm just saying that the power today, who's in power, who's in charge of the country, the very top influential people in the government are people that have been close, very close ties with Ben Ali. And the prime minister, the foreign minister is married with his daughter, I think, the sister of Ben Ali. Like these people, and they have been like in the Ben Ali governments for a long time, and they never said anything until today. They didn't say anything. If they came out and they said, listen, we had to do this because we didn't have a choice, because Ben Ali didn't ask us, because they didn't say anything of that. They're like, okay, we'll give you. And this is very nerving. This is very, very insulting for the main citizens. It's very, very insulting. It's very insulting. So I think now the way to go is that we get rid of them. They have to get, they have to leave the government. I'm not saying they don't have the right to come after if they happen to be here, but these people, they have to leave the government. Otherwise, there will be a big sense of injustice. Especially that many people are escaping now, the Tunisia, and many proofs are being destroyed. And the people don't feel like with this government that they did anything. They probably like made Ben Ali leave, right? They understood that. He's now somewhere in Arabi Saudi or somewhere, I don't know, Saudi Arabia or something. But who's in his place now? Like, you know, he was exchanged by the same people that he was with. They were the same people that were running the country. This is not like, you know, it doesn't have a right feeling to it. And it's like, yeah, people that know, a lot of people that didn't even have fun. Like, you know, they didn't even celebrate this revolution and Ben Ali's removal. Because they found that this new government they made is just a joke. It's a joke. It's insulting people. And then the new interior minister, for example, he made a speech yesterday. He was going, what he said? He said that, people should stop these protests and everything. There was a lot of losses and like 1.5 million losses or whatever. Ben Ali escaped with I don't know how many millions, like something incredible. Something incredible. He by himself, I think he's like about, if I'm not wrong, he's at 9, that's sure, and probably more. So, 9, yeah. So, it's like, yeah. What, I mean, he's talking like, he didn't say, oh, we're sorry about the guys that were killed. We're sorry about the martyrs, like the protesters that were killed. Or we're sorry about the police. We're sorry about what Ben Ali did. He didn't say that. He didn't even apologize to the population. Maybe if he did, it probably would have seemed like trustworthy, but he didn't. And people are not stupid anymore. It's not like they're not. They got to understood when they saw the revolution of the people of Tunisia against a powerful, very powerful regime, and they understood that they got some power there. You know, they got some power. They didn't get what they want. Now they probably would. It's not going to be as tough as a confrontation, but they're like, you know, the resistance will continue, I guess, because they're not happy. Many people are not happy. Many people are not, oh, you didn't listen to us when we told you we don't want you anymore. It's not that we don't want Ben Ali alone. We don't want all of these things, like, you know, all of this shit happening, like including corruption, including torture, including whatever, including like obscure regime where nobody knows what's going on, including like insulting messages, including lies, including TV that only does lies. Today actually was a little bit better. It showed protests, but up to today, it didn't even show protests. And people were like, you know, why the hell do we have to pay from our taxes this TV station, you know, this national TV station? Why do we have to pay it? If it's going to talk about only good things or the things that we don't leave, why do we need it? And they, you know, yeah, and they actually, they do, they can, in some area in Sfax, they got a hold of the radio station, and the people were doing the radio, they didn't break anything. They just told the people that were at the microphone, they said, okay, please leave, you know, and they did their show, and they were talking about, and everybody was talking about his problems and everything, and people liked it, actually. They're like, people were like, we're happy, you know, now we can talk on our media. This is a regional radio, you know, in south of Tunisia. People were happy. That's what people are looking for. They try to, now it's actually the government is not as tough with us, I'm sure. But as soon as it could get tougher, it's gonna get tougher. So that people know, you know, like, you know, you have to respect us, you have to show us respect, you have to do your work. And at the end of the day, you have to deserve your reputation, you have to deserve your, you know, your legitimacy in front of these people. And that's it. I mean, now we're more than halfway. We're far more than halfway. And it's going to probably take more time at the end, because at the end, all the as my analysis goes, it will take more time, because it's a little bit trickier. And the government's making a lot of tricks. But even if we can steal the pressure as high, probably they won't steal it. Right now, they will not steal. But if we can, like, so either remove them, either keep the pressure as high for the next 6 months so that they don't do any dirty things and that we have democratic elections. And it's after the democratic election, I mean, that's it. I mean, if there is democratic election on a stand of, like, you know, if the powers are separated, if the constitution is revisited, and it becomes, like, you know, more inclined for democracy, because we have to say that the constitution in Tunisia was done, I mean, was changed so many times without even people knowing about it. Nobody was knowing about it. It was like parliamentary guys were from the RCD thing. So they were like, okay, let's do this. Okay. So they did, they tailor-made a constitution for Ben Ali. And he was like, okay, let's change this. Oh, I'm going to be more than 75 if next election in 2014 was supposed to be 2014. So, oh, let's start campaigning for me. And so he brought in all the media. And you see people, oh, Ben Ali have to stay. Ben Ali is... And now it's funny because most of these people, like, they're artists and football players and whatever and whatever. So these guys now, they're coming and they're insulting Ben Ali. It's like, you know, and people actually remember them. So, oh, it's like, we 2 months ago you were saying, you were like chanting Ben Ali to stay there and stay till 2014. How come now today you're insulting him? I mean, you're stupid or what? Or you think we don't know that? So yeah, and internet is making a lot, because internet, especially Facebook, you know, social networks, because you'd see, like, you know, the footage from the video where he was saying something and another footage of the video where he was saying the opposite thing, you know, these guys. And it's kind of funny, and, like, you know, people, it's kind of making it more transparent, more clear for everybody. The internet is not going to make our government. The internet is not going to run our government, I think. I think at some point there will be some people that are going to run the government, and it's a good idea to at least show them what we can do with the internet, how information can get on the internet, and how, you know, by the proof of videos and media, we can, like, you know, like media, like photos and videos and sounds and multimedia, we can show things and we can channel messages. So at least now they kind of take it into consideration and the way how they exert their power on the country. And that's by itself, I think, it's something not negligible and something that's gonna help our country stay in away from the dictatorship, stay away from the corruption, stay away from many things like that. I mean, there was some CEOs today in Tunis. They were like of corrupt banks and stuff. They were running on the streets and there were people running after them to catch them and to give them to the military or to the police. And the guys were running and people were filming that with their phones and their cameras, you know, and it was so funny. Like, it made a hit, like on Facebook, everybody, it made a buzz, enormous buzz, because everybody was looking at that and saying, like, ooh. Everybody was happy somehow, and everybody was scared somehow, because, yeah, I mean, they shouldn't be running like that. They should have been arrested, or they should have been assigned to their houses, you know, at home, and prevented from going that far, and, you know, there would have been like judges who are judging them, not people running after them to catch them. You know, there would have been like policemen. You know, if there is a warrant, they would go there and bring the guy and put him in custody or put him into, you know, researches when they do searches on him and see like audits. And but now today, that's the situation. There's so many funny things. There's so many fears, and there's some considerable feeling, and actually. It's like, it's not even feeling, like confirmation that many, many, many of our young youth in Tunisia and even like, you know, older people are aware. They know what they want. They especially know what they don't want. And that is going to be very tough for anybody to change that mentality, I think. It's going to be very tough. You have to indoctrinate them. I mean, it's going to take time even for the people to release their guard and to keep... Sure.
We have two questions for you, and we are hitting close midnight, so we're running out of time. And the first question I would like to ask you is, there is still a lot of media attention in the whole world, and it focuses on Tunisia, and I would like to know what you think, what's the right thing of other people in the world, other hackers, or the general public to act in this case? Can there be anything done to help you, or any kind of media perspective or coverage of this current affairs which you would find helping?
Yeah, I think it's trying to mediatize the right needs for this for our people of Tunisia what they're looking for. They're looking for some kind of democracy. They're looking for some kind of separation of power. They're looking for very good justice. They're looking for very good police as well, because our police is not that good. It's actually corrupt and it's actually very problematic. Customs as well. We're trying to build all that. But probably we need help. We need the attention from the media outside so that they see that if things like that. We don't want actually a lot of, we want like, we want like everybody's, we don't need, we started like, you know, after 23 years of dictatorship, when you see Ben Ali being like Sarkozy in France saying good words about Ben Ali, and we know how he is, it's kind of, you know, it made... But we're after all, like, you know, it made like the message that other governments, Europe, US, are protecting him, and they might be protecting him. They might not. I don't know. And it's not like it's just discussions that are worth nothing for me and for many people. Now they start to like, you know, to focus. We have to focus on things. And like, yeah, the media outside could help us if it actually broadcasts the what the people says, but not the. Not the actual right now today's government, because today's government is not representative at all and is lying, and it's something that's not representative of what Tunisia is. And I come from the people, I come from there, and I know that we have a lot of different mentalities, We are very like we are a very complex population for a small population, but very complex. It's not unified. And but at the end of the day, I think the Tunisian population is very peaceful. It's very eager to open to the exterior world, and it's still is very open because there's Tunisians everywhere in the world, and they like you know there's they're forced by immigration. They went on illegal immigration, and there are many that went on like education based immigration and work based immigration, and they're like you know they're pretty much. Well said, like especially my generation and the generation right before me, they're like, you know, well, they adapt very well everywhere. And we're like, that's it. I mean, that's our people. We are like that. And we've been pushed by a dictator to become like not even 2%. Like, you know, we're living in somewhere else. People were like pissed off every day. They couldn't talk about anything. They couldn't express anything. And I think this is the time for Tunisia to become like you know it's a very important country, even if it's tiny, an important country for the other Arab worlds, and at least to show an example of what could be done in the other Arab worlds in terms of democracy, in terms of freedom to their people.
Mm-hmm. I think this example.
I just wanted to say that
the example you gave is remarkable, and I think especially in the Arabic world, many people notice and are very thankful for this great spotlight in how the people can say to the government that there is a line a dictatorship cannot completely go off the democracy and then still try to have the mask of the reasonable government. And we don't know if this will
like, we gave more than 100 people killed by firearms, by police firearms. That's like 100 people in New York City killed by police in one, like, you know, in 1 week or something like that. So I think it was a good, but especially for a country, maybe in New York City, there is mobs and there is stuff. But in our country, there were not firearms. There were not like fire shots or firearms like that. There were not. So it's something that we paid for, and it's a good message. Yeah, it's a good message. There is uncertainty. There is always uncertainty. But this uncertainty is more securing for us. It's more reassuring for us than the Ben Ali dictatorship. Because Ben Ali dictatorship, we knew it. We lived it. We've been like battling with it, and we couldn't do anything. I mean, it was like, you know, it was hell. It was living, even if some people had situation, had whatever, but they were living in a dream of a life. It wasn't like the real life where they had like, this is the real life. You have to remove some peace from here. You have to remove some peace from here. You have to put a barrier here. You have to put a barrier here. You have to put a barrier here. And it's not even legal barrier. If it was the law for everybody to put a barrier here, that's right. Okay. But this is, you have to put to yourself a barrier here. It is not even legal. That's the barrier that Ben Ali imposed on you. And this is the law, what it said. And Ben Ali said this, and he didn't even say that. I mean, you'd go over it. I mean, you get killed, or you get tortured, or you get beaten up by the police, or you get, you know, you get fired from the work, or you get all this type of pressure they put on you. And now that's it. I mean, that's what I said. I mean, I think it's going to be very good. It's going to take some time. It's going to be very good. It's going to be very unifying to our country, but unifying in a way that's actually more built on, upon justice, upon like a very good constitution and law, than unifying the mentality of everybody, and everybody would think the same thing, or everybody would believe in the same things. That's I don't think that's even possible in Tunisia today. It's not possible at all. So the society will regulate itself. There's a big part of the society that's completely today against corruption and against there's this feeling that's very reassuring for me, that the people are kind of, I understood that many Tunisian people, they have principles. They were not able to talk about them and everything because the environment was corrupt. But they have principles, and if they got to the position where they can talk about it and they can teach others about it and everything, I guess if you teach people nice things in a motivating way and everything, they would hear you. If you teach them bad things in an environment that only accepts bad things and corruption and everything, of course they will hear you. So it's all a matter of environment. And we're like two steps or three steps before having a government that's clean. And from the government that's clean, everybody's going to be constructive in the civil society. And there was signs of veritable signs of solidarity in the days where there was the militia and people helping themselves and helping others. And it's kind of unifying for the people. And I hope it stays like this. I hope the media is not going to get into the politics, and especially the foreign politics that kind of sometimes want to control, and sometimes they want to test, and sometimes they would go nice articles, and then they would go on bad articles, and then they would talk, oh, well, maybe the current government is not that bad, or maybe I've heard numbers, figures on the protests that happened. Today they talked about it, but they didn't give figures. But yesterday they given figures, they were they were heard. I mean, they were not, like, there were more people on the streets, and you look at the media, do you look at the papers, like French papers, for example, they were like talking about 1,000 protesters. There was at least 5,000 protesters. So it was like, yeah. And I think it's a good sign for everybody in Europe and everywhere to show Tunisia some kind of, respect and love. And that, I'm not saying that we're expecting anything. I mean, we know that the world is open. We know that this time is for global mentality. We know that, soft power is the thing to go to. We know that you have to be, you have to give people the right to do their stuff. You have to, but you have to also to have justice, like that's cool, that's right. And you have to have a law that's really good. And you have to, we know all that. So it's gonna be a matter of time. It's not gonna be easy, but hopefully we're gonna do it. If we're not gonna do it, that means that we don't want it that much. And if we don't want it that much, I mean, we deserve it. That's it. It's like the same thing with dictatorship. We showed that we could have get rid of this dictatorship. Why didn't we done it before? Because maybe it wasn't the right time. That's it. Maybe it wasn't the right time. Maybe it wasn't the right time. Maybe it's other factors. But I think it's gonna, go ahead, that's it. I mean, I finished all I had to say.
Yeah, it's been amazing, and I hope, I believe that the talk and the time is right now, that Tunisia is has suffered enough and has lived a long time under the wrong circumstances, and especially the work your organization has been doing for the last few years helped a lot in raising awareness. And we will follow the case, and I can't thank you much for all the work you did. And maybe we'll have you again on the show when
anytime you let me know. I respect a lot the hacker mentality. I've been on FRAG for as long as 96. I think I started online in 96 on special lines in Tunisia, from the research centers there, that were the first internet line. We used to use a CompuServe to connect, and then there we had a cable from Italy or something, a bone from Italy. And I like the hacker's mentality. I like the transparency. I like. I think that's. I mean, we saw it with the WikiLeaks. We saw it with many things. And the youth of Tunisia is kind of very, very. We got like Anonymous coming to Tunisia helping and everything. And it's like Anonymous, but 4chan, but it's still something nice. And I know that the youth in Tunisia are very, very receptive to this kind of messages.
Well, we really want to wish Tunisia the best for the next few weeks, because there's probably going to happen a lot. Well, sorry, we have to end up the show because we're almost running out of time. Just some short notes. Social Hack, thank you very much for joining in the show. We had Lee Doc from the remote side, but his battery died, so he already disconnected. We had Jan Klopper. We had GMC. Thank you for the technicians. We had Aki. Thanks for all the recipes of the cooking. Finally, we had Dr. Wax. We had NOP Ops in Amsterdam. So we had a lot in the show, and especially the final interview was great. GMC, you still have some music to announce?
I forgot to announce the last song that we played, which was I lost it. Anyway, this song is Jimmy Carter by the band 20 Pound Sounds. The song we had before that was Zinedine Zidane by Blue Swerver. Thank you all for listening. And
don't forget,
the Detroit show is coming at you in about half a minute. We listened to the last bit of the song. Thank you, Fish, and good luck in the coming days with becoming a father.
Yeah, and don't forget, signal at hackerspaces.org for your best hack baby hack to win the t-shirt. Bye-bye.
We get signal, main screen turn on. You're listening to the radio program about hackerspaces.